The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by Land Rover. With a new Land Rover as your companion, you'll see adventure wherever you go. Visit your local Land Rover retailer for special offers on the 2019 Range Rover. Adventure, it's yours for the taking. Land Rover, above and beyond.
From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, this is the New Yorker Radio Hour, a co-production of The New Yorker and WNYC Studios.
This is the New Yorker Radio Hour. I'm David Remnick. Now, you're in for a real treat today because we'll be spending this episode with the comedian, actress, and cabaret performer, Bridget Everett.
It's Bridget!
Hi! Hi. I brought a plus one. She won't bother anyone.
The plus one was Everett's dog, Poppy.
Hello, everyone.
I really brought a plus two. Sorry about the skirt. And the bra, it's a little peekaboo just to show people that I'm still fun.
Welcome to the New Yorker Festival.
Now, if that's not clear enough, Bridget Everett runs a little salty. Salty's the word, I guess. So heads up, some of this might be awkward with the kids around, or with the parents around, for that matter. Here she is with Michael Shulman at the New Yorker Festival.
Bridget Everett is a singer, an actress, a comedian, a cabaret star, a force of nature, and a way of life. She's performed everywhere from Carnegie Hall to Adelaide, Australia, and of course at Joe's Pub, where she appears regularly with her band, The Tender Moments. She's been in the films Trainwreck and Patty Cakes, on TV in Inside Amy Schumer and Girls, and starting October 14th, she stars in the new HBO comedy Camping. To quote the New York Times, multiply the mouthy, flesh-jiggling early Bette Midler by 100. Give her the super plus-size figure and fashion sense of Divine, the John Waters diva, and the manners of a Flintstone, and you've got a rough approximation of Bridget Everett. Let's give her a hand.
I'll clap for that. That's good.
Also, can I have some Chardonnay?
Yeah, you know, a little bit. I can't part with all of it because I'm on a diet. You want more?
No.
Okay, there's more.
Great.
If you want it. You sure?
Okay.
I want. Okay, you let me know. Are you nervous, Michael?
I'm fine.
Okay.
A couple years ago, I called you for an interview, and you were on a nude beach with Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
But we had a nice chat. And you described your stage presence to me as, quote, a crazy maniac who doesn't get laid enough, so I have to put my sexual energy somewhere. So how much of that person that we see on stage is you? How are you? Is there a different Bridget who is home in the end of the night and completely different? How do you contrast the two?
Well, I feel like the more I've been doing the stage Bridget, and the wilder she's gotten, the sort of more, the more I'm like on the couch with my Poppy, and I can't wait to, I'm so happy to be here, but I can't wait to go home and get on the couch and just, I like to watch documentaries and Homeland, but there's no new season, so I had some time in my schedule, so I'm here. But I mean, it used to be like, it's like when you're starting, it's like you're just like, you want people to listen to you, right? And like, and I felt like I had to just go so wild and go so big and so crazy, but that's also kind of who I was. And of course, now I'm 46, so you know, now I'm not as fun as I was in my 20s and 30s, but the stage Bridget still is. So.
You have an incredible ability to interact with your audience. Mm-hmm. I have just seen Joe's Pub get whipped into a total frenzy. How did you have to learn that skill? I mean, how did you figure out how to do that?
The stuff on stage when I'm singing the same songs and telling the same story, that's like, it's just a device to get to know who's there. And it really is like, every show is like a first date. It's like you're meeting somebody, you're falling in love, or you're not falling in love, but you're hoping you get laid. You know what I mean?
So you grew up in Manhattan, Kansas.
I did.
Did you fit in there? Did you stick out like a sore thumb? I mean, what was your relationship with Manhattan, Kansas?
I was like wild. I'm youngest of six kids, and like we all thought we were the Kennedys, but really we were just like street rats. But like popular. Like I mean, this is like not cool, but I was homecoming queen. You know, I was like a weirdo, but also kind of cool. You can't say that anymore, you know? It's not cool to be cool.
And can you tell us about how you started getting interested in music and singing? Who were the performers that you worshipped when you were young or wanted to emulate?
My mom's a music teacher, so we used to get drunk and sing around the piano, and like, from a young age. Like, that was one of the cool things about my brothers and sisters. Like, they would give me a little bit of Blue Nun, which is, if you don't know, it's a sweet white wine suitable for children. But that was, like, that was the only time we all got along. But also, we would listen to, like, a lot of Barbra Streisand, who, like, I was like, okay, whatever. But when we put on Barry Manilow, I mean, that was it for me. And then... Also, I had a real hard-on for Debbie Harry because, like, I thought she was just so cool. And then, like, Freddie Mercury, and then always Michael Jackson.
You went to Arizona State University and studied opera voice, right?
Yeah, that's where people go.
Yeah, so... Is there stuff that you learned in opera training that you still use?
Yeah. I don't fuck around. I do a lot of vocalizing. I do all that. But other than that, like, it basically what it taught me was that you really have to care for your instrument. And like, and when you see like me singing, like sucking down a hot dog down the back of my throat, they're like, she didn't care. But I really do. I spend a lot of time and I'm very obsessed with like, that it just works.
When you moved to New York, what was your life plan for moving to New York? What did you see for yourself?
Just get a job. I really was just like, oh, let me see if I can get like my equity card and get some like children's theater tour. And I did. I did a Hansel and Gretel bus and truck tour. I got a job pretty quickly. It was awful. It was total hell. I hated everybody in there. I learned a lot about myself, but I was like, I moved to New York to be in this fucking bus and sing for second graders in fucking like Mississippi, like tell them to get Hansel to jump over the river, which is like a piece of cardboard with like some blue taffeta, and like we're waving and like swim, swim, swim. I'm glad things have gotten better since then.
So how did you go from being a children's theater actress, waitress, singing karaoke to having your own act?
My friend Zach, who I lived with for like 2 months, took me to go see Kiki and Herb at Fez. Like, I just didn't know that like cabaret existed. I didn't know like, you know, Justin Vivian Bond is like a hero and an icon, and like, and the things that I would see, I was just like, holy shit, this is like karaoke, but like legitimate.
And then I fall apart, and I need your love tonight, and I need you more than ever, and if you'll only hold me tight, we'll be holding on forever, and we'll only be making it right. If we can just hold on together, we can make it to the end of the line. Your love is like a shadow on me all of the time.
And then I remember you did a show called At Least It's Pink in 2007, which was directed by Michael Patrick King, right?
Yeah.
The creator of Sex and the City. So how did you get involved with him as a collaborator?
I just like adapted my karaoke set to like a real show. And we end up going to the Aspen Comedy Festival. They told Michael to come see me. And I remember it was like Michael Patrick King was there. Norman Lear was also in the audience. And it was like 1,000 people. And I was so nervous. And as soon as I came on stage, 30% got up and left. And but Michael stayed, and so did Norman Lear. And Michael was like, I want to work with you. And so I, Kenny and I went to LA, and we sat with him, and we figured out a show. And that's kind of like where my life started to change. Hmm.
And is that also how you wound up in Sex and the City movie?
Yeah, he wrote me a part. It's like a very small part. I interview for like a job. I'm like, I play like drunk party girl, and like, and she's interviewing assistants, and she's like, are you drunk? I'm like, a little bit. And, but he's like, I wrote you a part. I'm still going to make you audition, and don't fuck it up.
Oh, so we actually have the clip of your part in Sex and the City.
Oh, no.
So, this is when Carrie is interviewing for personal assistance.
I love your books. Your shit's brilliant.
Kathy? You seem drunk.
A little bit. Never made it to bed last night. But I type like a motherfucker.
Yeah. So did you go out and audition for kind of regular acting jobs as this was all happening?
No. No, because I like to be in control. And when I audition for things, I get chronic. I get the shits. I get really sick and nervous and overwhelmed, and you know that movie Lady Bird? Uh-huh. I met with Greta Gerwig, and she's like, well, I just want you to come in and read. And I was like, no. Joke's on me.
So one of the people who has completely seen your talent and been able to use it to great effect and bring you to a huge audience is Amy Schumer.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you become friends with Amy Schumer?
At the Montreal Comedy Festival, we were on the same flight. She said that we'd met like years before and I was a bitch to her, but I just don't believe it. I just don't buy it. I'm so desperate for people to like me that this is absolutely not possible. But I would just like those kinds of things. I just like go and hang out in my room and drink wine and watch porn or documentaries. And she's like, come down and like, let's talk to some people, let's mingle. And then like, and we just became really fast friends. We both love Chardonnay. We both have a similar sense of humor. But the cool thing about Amy is she really does work to lift up people around her. Like she wants to. She put me on her show, like, and her Inside Amy Schumer was like a really big deal, you know, and she's like, I want you to be on the show, and I want you to close every season. She's like, I think you're really special, and I want the world to see you. And I don't know that I would ever do that for anybody except for Poppy. You know what I mean?
So we have a clip from Inside Amy Schumer. This is the Schumerenka tennis match.
Bridget Everett is just 3 points away from winning her fourth Grand Slam.
Remarkably, she has not allowed Schumerenka a single game in this match. And yet, I can't take my eyes off of Schumerenka's unique style on the court.
I agree, Patrick. Schumerenka has a charisma on the court that just pulls you in.
I think one reason why Schumerenka is having such a difficult time in this match is the distraction factor of Everett's grunting.
Oh, God, it's disgusting. I mean, they should really ban it.
Heaving and sweating like a Clydesdale, Everett makes the shot. Let's take a look at the instant replay.
So great. So do the two of you, like, in your friendship have any of that dynamic of kind of like the alpha and the beta, or?
What do you mean?
Well, in that skit, she's sort of like the type A personality or whatever. She's a sort of, what, you know.
You mean she's hot and I'm sponsored by ground beef?
Yeah, and you're like the hot mess. I mean, what is it like that when you hang out?
No, we just hang out. We just take off our bras and drink wine and watch 90 Day Fiancé. Like, we, you know, certainly she's really successful and she's beautiful and loaded. You know, she picks up the checks, but we hang out and we chit chat, and it's pretty balanced.
Mm-hmm. I was watching a clip of you being interviewed by Larry King, which is already pretty great. But he said at one point, "You have a lot of body confidence," which is just like, I just can't imagine that Larry King has ever phrased that question before to any of his other guests. Did you always have body confidence, or was it an evolution of embracing that, or what?
I mean, again, it's just like being on stage is like being the person that you wish you were all the time. And when I was growing up, my mom we would go to the grocery store and she would just wear like her nightdress with nothing underneath it. And we'd go to Food for Less and she just didn't care. And so like, for me, that sort of just like not caring, it's not about like, look at me, honey. Look at my curves. Yes, queen. Yes. It's like, it's more about just like, it's my body and who gives a fuck. You know what I mean? Like, that's all. Because I do appreciate the people that are just like, I'm here, I'm giving testimony to like all the other big girls out there. And I don't, you know, don't hate yourself. But like, if I'm like an audience member, I want to see somebody on stage or see somebody in real life. I want to see people just like fluid in themselves and not telling me why I need to be fluid in myself. That's what brings me joy, and that's why I like to do it on stage. I feel like we're celebrating in the moment that we're all okay.
So I want to, before we run out of time, talk about Patty Cakes, because it was such a great movie, such a great role for you. This is a scene with you and the title character, Patty Cakes, and you play her mother. So
okay.
Let's just take a quick look at this scene from Patty Cakes.
You know, Ma seems depressed. You don't take her out during the day when I'm at work. Maybe get away from the television. You know, let her live a little bit.
No, I'm busy.
You're busy?
I'm grinding.
What the fuck is grinding?
Focusing on my music, you know?
Your music? Well, since when do you do music, honey? Oh, you don't have a musical bone in your body, and you sure as hell can't sing. What kind of music are we talking about here?
I've been rapping.
Rapping?
Rhyming, I'm seeing, you know?
Really?
Jerry and I just booked our first recording session.
What's your rap singing name? What are you, like, Dewey Dewey Dumb Drops or some shit?
I'm actually going as Killer P.
So this is a character who kind of once wanted to be a singer, but kind of hasn't fulfilled her dream.
Yeah.
That he was, and she's her way of dealing with that is destroying Patty Cakes' ambitions to be a rapper.
Yeah.
Was there stuff you had to draw on from that that was different than just being your fun-loving self on stage? I mean, how did you tap into that, the sort of resentment of the character?
I don't know. I feel like dreams are complicated, you know? And, like, I spent a lot of years, like, wanting my dreams to come true. And, like, sometimes, mostly I'm always really happy when my friends have success. But I get the urge to want to tear somebody down, even when you love them, because you don't want them to slip away, you know, or that you don't want them to have something that you never had. So, you know, but I just spent a lot of years wanting those things and never having them. So it wasn't too hard.
Do you think of this character as maybe like a version of yourself who had never moved from Arizona or who had never, you know, quit waitressing, or that you like, do you see like that this person as a kind of an alternate life that you could have led?
Yeah. If I was still in Kansas and I wasn't singing and I wasn't doing what I wanted to do, that's exactly who I would be. And I would be that drunk and I would be at that bar, hopefully not with those nails, but I would be that person.
Thank you, Bridget. <That's> amazing.
Bridget Everett, talking about the 2017 film Patty Cakes. She talked with The New Yorker's Michael Shulman. I'm David Remnick, and that's our show. I hope you'll join us again next week. It might be a little less dirty and more serious, you never know, but we'll try to have some fun. Till then, stay in touch with us on Twitter @New Yorker Radio.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is a co-production of WNYC Studios and The New Yorker. Our theme music was composed and performed by Meryl Garbus of Tune Yards, with additional music by Alexis Quadrado. This episode was produced by Alex Barron, Emily Botine, Ave Carrillo, Rhiannon Corby, Jill Duboff, Karen Frillman, Kalalia, David Krasnow, Louis Mitchell, Sarah Nix, and Stephen Valentino, with help from Rhonda Sherman, David Ohana, Emily Mann, and Jessica Henderson. The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported in part by the Chirina Endowment Fund.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by Land Rover. Invest in Rocky Mountain Passes. Trade in hedge funds for tropical rainforest funds. Put your money into wondrous real estate you won't find on any broker's website. Adventure, it's yours for the taking. With a new Land Rover as your companion, you'll see adventure wherever you go. Visit your local Land Rover retailer for special offers on the 2019 Range Rover. Adventure, it's yours for the taking. Land Rover, above and beyond.